Yo. Yeah, bitch. Hey, yo. Motherfucker. Hey, yo. Swallow it. Hey, yo, we dash lost this bloody version of glaze. The slingshot through a gem in his mouth. Swallow his razor. Say no more, my back be parked against the wall. Troopers, we're holding. Face don't give a fuck about the law. I bought the bracelet. Don't get blinded by the ice ball. It's not called piranha, they'll slip. Lost his decimal. Look at my jumper logo, look familiar. It's power. Through every fine stitch, knocks it into Betty Barrel. Gucci sneaker rock is just another form of test box. You know, cock blocking supreme clientele. Till I'm dropping, can't go slanting. Go serene with a hippie home now. Club bandit, never empty handed when let's hand it. Mark calling Austin. Mark calling Austin down in Boston. Bumped to the deck, copping the lofting. Big chain swinging, nigga. Matchbox car driving. Street wilding. Raleigh with the four finger gliding. Watch him. Scorching with spells and top toxin. Amoxicillin stock. Skyrock hit Bobby Moccasin. Switch from Perk Plus. Escrow on the side. Going sun truck. Close to keep shining to the sun bust. She roll out. Born to be right behind the curtain with the nose out. 60 cent to get the rover out. Featherhead heavings. Teething on Mike Dicks when I said, now the kids die for your bread.
Yo,
nigga.
Yo, police don't want us in clubs because we spazzed out. Who is these righteous motherfuckers with their flags out? Stapleton Project, recognize you're looking at a large best. Putting on the hits is no contest. Now, who the hype is in New York City? Wu-Tang! Radio, stop shitting on me!
I got 50 men out on the street now. If they all get bitch troubles, I starve. Is that it?
I don't know how well I'm going to be able to focus on this thing today because, you know, we had our playoff game and win the championship tomorrow. So kind of what I've been thinking about for most of the last few hours. But
you're looking at all the angles or what?
Yeah, looking at the angles.
If you don't see all the angles, you lost.
You lost, motherfucker. Yeah, nah, I did some scouting, but it's a team that won the championship last year and they knocked us out in the semifinal last year. So now...
What team is this?
Herman.
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 Yeah, the funny thing about Herman.
And Willerby.
You remember Herman? Remember my Herman sweater?
You had a Herman sweater?
Yeah, because my stepsister went to Herman.
Really?
Yeah. It's a red sweater with the blue letter. It was the blue letters on it. Mm-hmm. I used to rock that Piedmont Middle.
I don't remember that at all. I remember.
Well, you never went to Piedmont.
Names like Herman and Willoughby
and Skirmelhorn
and
Classening. So you got that coming up. I have a major quandary as well. So it looks like I'm going to be the head coach of my daughter's single A team,
right.
Which I don't want to be. But
you're not going to be recruiting any players from outside of the district.
Nah.
Making you therefore ineligible for the World Series.
There are people that do that. And there's probably people that do that in the league that I'm in. But, yeah, I don't want to be the head coach. Usually, like, the guy that's the head coach, his daughter doesn't want to play. So I got to go over and slap her around a little bit and tell her to play so I don't have to be the head coach. But I just want to make everybody mad and make the team the Yankees team. You know? What do you think? Yeah. It's between, like, the – I mean, I already know what the answer is going to be. But
you better get on the recruiting trail then.
What team do you think I should pick for a little league team? Now, I have, like, an A shirt from last year. I have – Ichiro's Mariner shirt, and then I have Yankees. I mean, I always have Yankee shirts, so.
Is your goal to piss people off?
My goal is to make kids love baseball. Okay. And I just feel like when
you gotta go A's then.
Nah, come on. That's
baseball love right there.
I just feel like when they're introducing the team that they said the Yankees, like, they're all because they're going to get booed on the field, you know, because that's something that San Jose would do, you know?
But the Royals.
Well, the Royals aren't too bad. That was, like, my older daughter's team was the Royals. What else?
Well, it's hard to cheer against the Royals at this point.
That's true.
The Padres are going to be coming up this
Padres.
Year.
Padres. Like. I like the colors of the shirt.
And you the father.
Yeah.
So you go Padres right there.
So Padres, is there another one? Maybe I should bring back the old Devil Rays, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to go Marlins, man. That's garbage.
Well, Ichiro's on the Marlins now.
Yeah, but that team's going to be garbage. Let's see.
Garbage.
I think you should probably avoid the Brewers.
What about the Brewers? That's what I'm going to say, dude. Because speaking of Brew, you're 3-in. I'm probably like 4 or 5-in, so.
You got any more?
No. Well, I do, but it's not for you.
That's garbage.
I got to be the responsible adult,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's garbage. Right,
I don't want you to have you call your mom and go,
I can drive.
Hey, Mom. I'm going to call my mom. Are you crazy? And Richard, I'm glad you called.
She'd be really happy if I were to call.
She would?
Yeah. To
pick her up in the station wagon or what? Yep. The marquee?
The Woody. The Woody.
She has the Woody now?
Nah.
What happened to the Grand Marquee?
That's long gone. But before that, there was the Woody.
The Woody?
The Oldsmobile.
I remember that one. The Oldsmobile. Yeah. The 98?
Nah, it wasn't the 98. But my dad always claimed he had a 98.
Your mom should have rocked that 98, dude. She could have had the leopard interior and stuff and everything and, you know. And the bulletproof this with the scanners.
The scanners and the rockets over here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. Like, I suppose we could start to talking about Raw, but I'm kind of thinking, I'm curious about what you thought because you finally got to see a little bit of New Japan last weekend and... think you saw Togi Makabe and Okada? Mm-hmm. That your first Okada match?
That was my first Okada match, and right. I saw my first Prince Devitt match as well.
Because you haven't seen any.
I haven't seen any Prince Devitt versus Hanahashi, right?
That's the guy's Tanahashi.
Tanahashi. I see. Yeah. There you go. I was thinking of Hawk Hana, you know.
Hawk Hanahashi.
Yeah.
Right, where you want? Which one you want to talk about first?
Tanahashi, dude. It was funny because I was kind of doing a little bit of research, but I guess Tanahashi was like the main attraction for that for New Japan for a while.
Yeah.
You asked me what I thought about watching the show. Epic, dude. I mean, it's good to see like old school wrestling again, dude.
Yeah, it is old school, man. Like you get that really slow build and like just chain wrestling for like the first 5-10 minutes.
Well, and Tanahashi does this. He does like this one move like off the ropes. It's like a. It's like a clothesline, but he spins around and like kind of
the high fly flow.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a sick move, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just like, I mean, I liked everything about it. And then watching Okada, that's his name, right?
Yeah. That Okada and Makabe.
Yeah. Makabe. Well, what I liked about it was like Makabe didn't impress me too much. I mean, he's a good wrestler, mm-hmm. but I really like kind of the dynamic of that match where people don't. I mean, they don't know whether to boo or cheer either guy because Okada's kind of playing the heel as well. And I want to get into something else if we pass over it, remind me to come back to it. But I really liked how the Togi like did Okada did a move and then Togi bounced right back up and got in his face and then like all the fans reacted to that. So I mean, it's just storytelling wise is really good. And then Okada probably did the best dropkick I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm just going like, what the heck was that? I mean, I'm always a big proponent of saying that Kurt Hennig had the best standing dropkick of all time. And I'll still say it, but Okada went all out on that dropkick. And, Dolph Ziggler, has a nice dropkick as well. But Okada was pretty good. And then at the very end, then I realized, like, his sidekick was Gedo. And I was like, oh, I'm a huge Jado and Gedo fan.
Yeah.
So, and I kind of was like, who is that guy? Because he looks familiar. And then I was like, Gedo, I'm like, ah, there it is.
Yeah.
So,
and he got him a title shot, right?
Yeah. And so I want to see Prince Devitt and Gedo hopefully this, next week or this Saturday, whatever it was. But it was refreshing. I mean, it's kind of, one of the things that we're going to bring up kind of with our Golden Mike is like, just like kind of the old, really kind of house show type wrestling. It felt like a house show, but at the same time, it's like there were big matches. So just, I miss that type of wrestling, and it's good to finally like see like wrestling like that again. Because we watch WWE, and we're so used to the WWE style, and it has it has matches, it has the matches, but there's overlaying storylines, and then you have bad commentary. I mean, this was just like just watching a really good match. The commentary was decent. I mean, it's nothing great, but there's no storyline involved, so you don't have to follow the storyline and like just get all wrapped up in what you're supposed to care about the storyline. You're just watching wrestling, and it delivered. It was great. I mean, I'm finally going like, it's watching good wrestling. Yeah. It reminded me of the old like NWA type wrestling where you're just watching a wrestling match and you're suspending your disbelief and you're just enjoying, like my boy Kanye says, the artistry of the. Of the matches and stuff, and it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've been saying the last few weeks when I started watching it, is like, it's really like like, if you liked watching, like, wrestling in the 80s and the early 90s and you kind of missed that style, this is still kind of the New Japan wrestling style is still kind of stuck in that time frame. And, like, by no means is that a bad thing. It's a good thing. You get to see, like, the slow build at the beginning. You know, you get to really get a feel of, like, what these guys can do as...
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was a slow build. I mean it wasn't slow, but I don't call it a slow build because it tells the better story of the match.
Right. Well, when I say it's a slow build, I'm not trying to say it's boring. It's just like... It's like these guys have, like, 30 to 45 minutes to run a complete match and tell the whole story they want to tell. They're not limited to, like, 10-minute segments with a commercial in the middle and things like this. So they get to take their time and build it up, and then, like, you enjoy it. You enjoy kind of where it goes from that, like, that chain wrestling to, like, when they start brawling to where you get, like, them, like, kind of no-selling, like, certain offense and getting in the guy's face and then, you know, kind of figuring out, like, who's going to win and what's going to be, like, the way they get the outcome. Like, I mean, I already know Okada's going to win because, you know, I was kind of not following by watching because I had no real way to watch it, but, like, kind of through, like, whatever I can read about it, like, who is winning. So I know, like, what they're showing right now is, like, kind of the ascendance of Okada and, like, then, like, his kind of run as, like, defending that title. So, you know, I know he's going to win the matches, but, like, Maccabi, like, I've seen a couple of his matches and been reading about him for quite a while, but I was pretty impressed with Maccabi as a worker, man. Like, I think, like, you know, he's like, like some of these Japanese guys, like, you know, there's a lot of very talented guys in the lighter weight classes, and then, like, some of them got to bulk up to be kind of like these big, like what would classify as, like, a powerhouse guy over there. But he's got, like, a pretty good physique for being, like kind of building a bunch of mass, but still, like, having the ability to be pretty agile, you know, in the ring. And I was pretty impressed. I thought Maccabi was really good in that match too.
I started like Maccabi in that one spot I was talking about, and then, I mean, he's a good worker, don't get me wrong. But then, you know, when he had that spot, and then I was all in on that guy. And he does, like, a Death Valley driver, like a variation of it.
Yeah.
And then I was sold. what I kind of really liked was just kind of, like, the promos that are leading up to it. Like, it's not, like, silly promos. You know, it's not like they're not trying to make fun of someone or, like, you know, say, like, a John Cena where he tries to bag on someone or whatever it was. It's just, like, you know, they're talking about, like, four styles of wrestling and stuff. I really enjoyed just kind of the basicness of it. The best thing out of that, out of watching that match, though, was so I looked up Okada on Wikipedia and just kind of started reading his career and stuff. And then they have a part where it says other media, and it says, like, happy video for Japan, right? So, you know, like, Pharrell's happy video, right? Yeah. And I'm a big Pharrell fan, so I'm not gonna. It's not a closet thing, you know. I like happy. I thought happy was a great song. So I look on YouTube for a happy song. So they have, like. So they had, like, two versions for Japan. One was, like, this, like, district in Japan, and the other one was, like, I guess, like, the official video, but, like, the district version first. And probably around, like, the 30-second mark, they had my boy, dude, Masahiro Chono, yeah. like in the video and stuff, you know, like, just kind of, like, he's walking in, like, this, like, high-end joint, you know, sells a lot of clothes and stuff. I was like, damn, like, that dude's still the man, dude, like, 50-some-odd years old, man.
His glasses and all that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. It was tight. And then they had a... They had Okada, and then I watched the other one with Okada, and, you know, he was there, and then it was, like, another kind of a famous wrestler. I think he's, like, a more of, like, a cruiserweight-style type wrestler, like, starts with a K or something, but it got me back into that. But, yeah, I mean, it was good. I mean, and not to take away from WWE, because I thought Raw was watchable. The main event, I think, didn't really work, and, you know, it's just kind of, like, something where... It's kind of like the same thing, like, where the middle of Raw, you know, is serviceable and watchable. And I really don't want to talk about Raw right now, and I don't think I want to talk about Raw about this podcast. I think I want to do, like, more of an overlaying thing, so start going to your memory bank and see what you want to talk about. But the match that I do want to talk about, two things I want to talk about. One of them is Bray Wyatt versus Dolph Ziggler.
The second one.
Another great match, you know, and I kind of want to get your perspective because... Beginning of this match, I was like, "Well, I don't want Bray to lose because he had such a great Royal Rumble that I don't want to see him lose to Dolph right now." And But at the end, he beats Dolph. But but who loses in that match? But at the same time, it's like, do you have a problem with Dolph losing twice to Bray Wyatt?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to respond to that. I enjoyed the run that Dolph had when he was winning a bunch of matches, and it kind of appears that's probably over right now. So if he's going to have to do jobs to guys, like, I would prefer it to be someone like Bray Wyatt.
But I don't think he's jobbing to Bray Wyatt. I mean, I think there's going to be, I think he's going to beat Bray Wyatt. I'm kind of looking at these matches, and the whole thing is we were talking about, Bray being stuck with, a Dean Ambrose, or stuck with other matches, other people that you really don't care about. Do you care about what's going on right now between Dolph Ziggler and him?
Well, I care to watch the matches because they're really good. I don't think there's any storyline. I mean, as far as I can tell, they seem to be trying to build it to Bray Wyatt and Undertaker. And that being the case, that's why, he showed so strong at the Rumble. And now they have him come out beating Dolph a couple of times. I don't see Dolph really winning any of those matches.
But he's gonna lose. Bray's gonna lose the Undertaker at WrestleMania, though, right? You can't have him be 21-2, or whatever it is.
I suppose, but either way, you got to make Bray look as strong as you can heading to Mania. So that's not going to do anything for Dolph.
Is Bray worthy enough of? I mean, because here's the whole thing: Undertaker losing to. Jesus Christ, Dean. That's the beer talking.
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, but him losing to Brock Lesnar is and that's somebody from my work. She works late at night. She's crazy. But, we always thought, if Undertaker would lose at WrestleMania, he'd give a rub to someone. And I don't think when he lost to Brock that Brock needed the rub. Do you think that Bray needs the rub, or is this going to kind of be like a swan song for Undertaker?
I think Bray does need the rub. I think that, if Bray loses this match, then, he's going to kind of have this pattern building where they give the appearance that he's kind of going to become this major threat, and then every year he doesn't get the job done at WrestleMania or at the main event, the main match where he really needs to. So I think that Bray losing is going to hurt him more than... I think it's tough. It's going to hurt him a lot if he loses, and it's going to elevate him tremendously if he wins. If I have to go off what history says, I'm going to assume that he's going to do a job for Undertaker, and right now they're really building him up to make him look strong so that when Undertaker wins, then it makes it look like a legitimate comeback.
So... couple things with that. Has Bray paid his dues yet? Has he paid his dues enough to warrant him being the Undertaker? And at the same time, because we're going to go to this. I mean, is this Undertaker versus Bray, is that a match you want to see? Because I'm not a fan of Undertaker. You're not a fan of Undertaker. But would you want to see Bray versus Undertaker?
I'm interested to see Bray versus Undertaker because... I think the thing that I've seen with Undertaker recently, kind of going back to that Punk match, if you put him in with a really good worker, he's still put on decent matches. And I really wasn't expecting much out of Punk and Undertaker. Previous matches with him in, Triple H or Batista, stuff was pretty tired. No one wants to see him wrestle Kane anymore. But Bray, that's hard to say because, Bray's a great worker. But for some reason, just pairing Bray with another good worker doesn't always work, right? With him and Daniel Bryan, a match really worked, but then, the overall feud, to me, didn't really do much, right? Him and Dolph have put on a couple of really great matches, but, there's no storyline involved. I don't know where it's really going to go. And then, Bray and Ambrose, who's another really good worker, you would think that was going to really pop, and it really didn't do much. I think the match was fine, but the finish was stupid. So it's not like every time you put Bray, even though Bray's a great worker, it's not every time you put him in with another good worker.
Well,
it always ends up working.
I don't know if he is a good worker. I mean, I know he's a good worker, but I don't know. To me, the quintessential worker is a guy that can make anybody look good.
Right.
Dolph is a great worker.
Yeah.
CM Punk was a great worker as well. Flair is a great worker. I think Bray is a good worker, but I think Bray has to be in charge to be a good worker. I don't think he can bring out I don't think he can bring out something in someone. Because with the two Dolph Ziggler matches, Dolph is, I think Dolph has really brought out a lot in Bray Wyatt. Now, I think Bray is a really good storyteller. And his story with Daniel Bryan worked really well. If Bray was a good worker, he would have been able to take that Ambrose feud that he had. He would have been able to take the John Cena feud that he had and made Ambrose and John Cena better than they are. And I don't think he's at that point yet. And that's why I want you to answer the first part of the question. Is this too soon for him to kind of be in the main event picture? Has he paid his dues enough?
I think he's paid his dues enough, man. I mean, the guy went through this whole Husky Harris shit. And, like, I really thought the guy, like, was good at that point in time, at least in the ring. For him to have to go back, reinvent himself, and then come up with this character that really works. Yeah, I think he's paid his dues. And then, you know, when he's got a gimmick that's really working and then they kind of take it away from him before it makes any sense and before the thing's kind of run its course, you know, I'd say you're kind of committing to this guy as this single wrestler. You know, let him do what you think you can, what you think he's going to do. I mean, kind of at the Rumble, it's like, I had no problem with him showing as strongly as he did. You know, I think it made a lot of sense. But I just, like, one of the problems is, like, they tease that they're going to let some young guy, some new guy, like, kind of break through and get to the top. McMahon talks about grabbing a brass ring. I mean, he's grabbing it as much as they're going to let him grab it right now. But at some point, you got to get behind the guy and let him win a match of consequence. And if that's what it's going to be at WrestleMania against The Undertaker, then good. And, I mean, I even think, you know, Bray has the ability to, even if he doesn't end up winning the match, come out looking really strong.
Is Bray too involved in his character to make, like, say, like a Mankind run as, like, a champion? I mean, do you see Bray as a World Heavyweight Champion within the next 2 years?
Yeah, I can see that.
So you don't think, I mean, because I kind of see Bray as, like, he's really into his character, he's developed his character really well, but the character does not fit in terms of kind of grabbing that brass ring and taking over. I wouldn't like to see it, but I think for Bray to have any chance of being in the main event picture, I think he has to turn face, but be like a face with his own character, like be a great character. And I think he's already a great character. And it's just kind of like a thing where I'm like, come on, man. Like, you got, everybody sees it except for the top guys. And of course you have that pecking order as well, but yeah, it's funny. It's like, everything's up in the air. It's kind of funny not to have John Cena in the WrestleMania picture, but it kind of seems like this has been like 2 years in the making because Daniel Bryan got hurt and everything like that. And then you have Roman Reigns as well. The only thing I want to talk about with Raw was Reigns kind of turning on Daniel Bryan and kind of getting the booze and stuff or anything like that. Is this something? Do you see a storyline developing here? Like what we're kind of positioning for? You think it's just kind of, just let's just do this and...
I don't know. Because I can't really trust that anything they do kind of like logically follows and makes sense. I mean, I think if you're going to go with what I laid out last week is what I think is a good direction to go in, this would be the way that you would do it.
Right? Do you see that happening, though? So what did you lay out and do you see this happening?
My layout is that he slowly shows like elements of becoming a heel, and then ultimately at WrestleMania he goes heel and Brock goes face, and Roman Reigns ends up with Paul Heyman as his kind of advocate going forward. I think Daniel Bryan brings a really interesting element, because if there's any kind of gray element, you know, that you're not sure what Roman Reigns is going to be. Him going against Daniel Bryan, who has like 100% fan backing, that should push Roman Reigns, to the direction of a heel, especially if you have him win in a way that's not completely clean. And like Roman Reigns, I think they're doing it well. Roman Reigns has all the motivation. You know, he's the one that kind of gave up his opportunity at the belt when he really didn't need to. So you would say, yeah, you know, the guy's got, she should do anything that he possibly could do to win a match. And realistically, I mean, that's the way it should work. But just because there's so much overwhelming Daniel Bryan fan support, you know, anything that Roman Reigns does, even if he wrestles like a 5-star match, like the internet wrestling community is going to come out and like figure out a way to clown on Roman Reigns. And I think that sets up really well for him to say, like, I did everything that I could have possibly done. Like, I mean, you just follow the Rock playbook, man. Like, I did everything for you guys. You know, I came out and I smiled. I wrestled my ass off every time I got in the ring. And you guys didn't support me, so screw you guys. And that's the perfect way to go with that guy. Now, is it going to allow him to kind of be, like, just kind of take the torch from John Cena and be this monster babyface? No. He's going to have to go and, like, work as a heel for a year or two. And then somehow find a way to have him kind of get screwed and come back and become the hero that people want him to be. But I think, like, if you're going to go that way, Daniel Bryan's the only guy that people care enough about as a babyface that you can get that kind of heat off of, like, good heat off of, to make him a heel.
So, before the Roman Reigns injury, because Roman Reigns was hot as all hell, so I think it's easy for everybody to point to, like, well, the reason why people are turning on Roman Reigns now is because he got injured, and he came back and he got a spot back. So all injuries aside, do you think because the whole thing is that you knew the program was going to be Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns after the Royal Rumble. I mean, we knew that back then. Is it a slow play? Was it a slow play that went wrong with him? Because, I mean, do you think that he would have had the same amount of backing that he did if he didn't get hurt? Because I kind of think that if you wait that long for... I mean, we're not talking about this Royal Rumble. We're talking about last year's Royal Rumble. I mean, so you're really looking at like a year and a half for him to kind of be the guy that's going to take over, no pun intended, the reins of the WWE. Was this a slow play that gone wrong? Because I don't think, even if he got hurt, that it would have worked out.
I don't think it's a slow play gone wrong. Even like as much positive momentum as he had out of coming to last year's Rumble, you know, he was still in the Shield, so like they still had whatever, you know, probably another like 5-6 months of momentum to ride the Shield off of before they broke him apart. And realistically, they could have had another year to 2 years of the Shield. So I think that what they did with him was calculated and it worked. I think, or it could have worked if he stayed healthy. They would have kind of continued to build the momentum once he started going solo. I just think, like, I don't know. I think the fan base.
Who would he have faced though? I mean, during that time. I mean, what guys would they put in his way to kind of build up the Brock Lesnar run that he was supposed to have? Because I don't think. I mean, he might win at Fastlane. I don't know, but I mean, right now with the way things are looking out, and especially with what you're saying, it's like. The common thread is that Daniel Bryan will probably run at Fastlane. But who would he if he was gone for like what 2-3 months? I mean, who would he face at that time? I mean, and that's kind of like the whole thing is like, is there an adversary that he could have faced and had like a 2-month program? And where would they put him in with that?
Well, I don't know what they would have done with him. I mean, I think there's guys he could have good matches with. I think the thing that happened was once he got hurt, it forced them to kind of like take Dean Ambrose and put him into the matches and the path that Roman Reigns would have been on. So I think whatever happened with Dean Ambrose in the time when Roman Reigns was hurt is what you probably would have seen Roman Reigns doing.
Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt?
Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, like things like this.
Do you think he would have been more successful against those guys? I mean, probably the other problem is that Dean Ambrose did face his guys, and he got a ton of support, and then right. He got pushed off to the side.
Right.
So, I mean, what went wrong with Roman Reigns?
I think it's bad timing, and I think it's like, you just got this this fickle crowd of internet people. Like, I mean, really, there was like this one really bad promo Roman Reigns did on SmackDown where he kind of forgot his lines, and it really turned on that promo is where everything turned super negative on the guy. And then I think, you know, pretty soon thereafter is when he became the wrestler of the year or whatever it was, superstar of the year. But off of the one bad promo, like, everybody really turned on the guy. And, I just think it's stupid. I mean, you know, sure, yeah. Is he a finished product? No, he's not. Are his promos better than you know, here's the guy that everyone compares him. Oh, here comes the next John Cena, right? Are his promos better than John Cena's? By far, yes, they are, and they have been. And that's pretty sad for a guy that's only been doing it for a year and a half compared to a guy that's, like, 10 years in.
So real fast, like, did Nikki, like, sit on John Cena's eye or something like that? I mean, does he have... I mean, what the hell's going on with this guy's eye, dude?
Makeup? I don't know. I don't...
But I mean, he's coming out each week. His eye gets worse and worse. I mean, does he have pink eye or something?
Yeah, I think Nikki farted on his pillow, and then he took a nap in it. And, you know, this is the result. I mean, I just whatever with John Cena, man. It's just like I just have a problem with people. Like, it's a very easy thing. Like, if you don't want to like really think and kind of like analyze what's going on to say, oh, Roman Reigns is the next John Cena. I mean, you know, at like, you know, less than 2 years into a career compared to a guy that's 10 years in or 12 years in, whatever he is. Like, Roman Reigns is better at essentially every aspect of wrestling or sports entertainment that John Cena is. And I'm getting sick of this whole, like, when you don't know how to make a complaint about a guy, you go and say, like, he's only got 5 moves, right? I mean... Granted, you know, Cena has a handful of moves and he runs the same spots, okay? But it's like, okay, people said the same thing about Bret Hart. It's like, I'm trying to, like, yeah, there was like a...
Me? Yeah, I did, sir.
Yeah, and there's
teacher,
a...
Teacher?
Sure, yeah. And there's a sequence that he goes through at the end. But, you know, you give this guy like a full, like, 15, 20-minute match. Don't try to tell me Bret Hart only has 5 moves, right? And Roman Reigns, like, you know, he has a pretty solid moveset. Now, you're really going to limit what he can do if all you're going to do is put him against Big Show, like, 5 weeks in a row, right? So I think let the guy go. Like, let him put him in good matches. You know, it's very easy to make Daniel Bryan look great if you're throwing him in matches with Seth Rollins. You know, why don't you give me Roman Reigns against Luke Harper, okay? Like, that's a match where, like, you know, Roman Reigns can win. It's not really going to do any damage to Luke Harper. But the match is going to, from a work rate, from like a like pacing, work rate, everything, it's going to be a much better looking match and something a lot more entertaining that people are going to get behind. So I just think people are looking for something to complain about Reigns just because it's not Daniel Bryan. I think it's kind of weak. but I think if you objectively look at kind of the trajectory he was on before he got hurt and, you know, him kind of just coming back in and doing what he's doing. I think he's doing all right.
Well, let's break down the myth of Daniel Bryan, because everybody lives and dies by this guy. But I have watched the same Daniel Bryan match for the past year and a half. I mean, the guy, and you want to talk about matches that are the same. He has the same match over and over again. And I'm not saying that he can't have a great match, but if you want to say, like, oh, Daniel Bryan's a guy because he's so this, so that, where has he been for the past year and a half? I mean, the match that he does was hot as all hell 2 years ago. And I was jumping on that wagon as well, going like, man, like this, the intensity of this guy is great. I mean, he's putting on really entertaining matches. But he hasn't done anything else. I mean, here's the thing. Is like, so he has a match with Bray Wyatt. He has a great match with Bray Wyatt, and he does the job for Bray Wyatt. He has a good match, as good of a match as he can with John Cena. But every match that's on Monday Night or SmackDown, and this is for everybody. This isn't a thing that just happens to like one or two, three wrestlers. I mean, Ric Flair had the same match for 20 years. I mean, when he was on TV, if it wasn't a main event, in a pay per view, he had the same match over and over again. CM Punk had the exact same match over and over again. Stone Cold had the exact same match overs. The Rock did. So, I mean, this whole idea of he has 5 moves or whatever it is, it's like, yeah, but, okay, but look at a Daniel Bryan match. It's because you can cheer to it, because he does a match where you can say yes when he does the kicks, when he does those same kicks over and over again, you can go, oh, I mean, and he's like, give me a break. I mean, he's had the same match over and over, and everybody puts this guy on a pedestal. I'm not saying I don't like Daniel Bryan, but what you're criticizing with Roman Reigns, I'm not saying you, but what the IWC is criticizing with Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan's doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, The same argument you can make against one guy, you can make against, like, all, the same guy that everyone's backing up and supporting.
And the only guy that you can't say that about, two guys that you only can't say that about is, well, three guys, is Dolph Ziggler, Luke Harper, and Bray Wyatt. Those three guys do, now, they all have their spots, but they tell different stories every single time.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're really like this, you know, intuitive wrestling fan, how come you're not fighting for these guys? How come you're not fighting for Dolph Ziggler? How come you're not fighting for Bray Wyatt? And how come you're not fighting for Luke Harper? Because the guy that you're putting your hat on is pretty much doing the same match over and over again. And I think the only difference is that he has a great chant, and it's very easy to kind of get wrapped in the moment, and the whole arena is doing it. It's like, when it comes down to it, it's the same sheep mentality all over again.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like...
Because I'll be the first to say, like, CM Punk had a lot of the same matches as well. And the whole thing is, like, I was a fan of CM Punk, so I followed it. But at the same time, I'm watching these matches. He has the same match. He had a lot of similar matches over and over again. And, you know, same thing with, like, Daniel Bryan. He had certain guys that he fought. And, you know, like, say, like, I thought, you know, even though he talked really bad about Ryback, I thought the Ryback match with him was really good, you know, just because it was a different form of storytelling. But all of these guys had the same matches.
I think it's kind of like when you follow like some band or kind of like some genre of music and you're trying to say like you figured it out before everybody else did, right? And so now, like, even though it's kind of
better yet, it's a fantasy baseball player, right? I discovered that guy.
I'll just stick with the music because
you don't want to get into Miguel Cabrera and all that stuff.
Well, I made Miguel Cabrera.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about, dude.
But he was nothing before I came along. Like, you kind of like find this band, and then you start supporting this band, and you're like kind of like feeling like you were there before. You know, everybody else jumped on the bandwagon, and then like now it's become like the mainstream, and like a lot of these people that are still kind of on that bandwagon, they haven't realized that it's become the mainstream, right? So they're still, like, kind of stuck in, like, the idea of, like, what these guys were doing on their first album, and now they're, like, four or five albums in, it sounds like every other fucking thing you're hearing on the radio, right? And I'm not, and again, like you, I like watching the Daniel Bryan match. I'm not going to fast forward a Daniel Bryan match. He puts on a good show. I have no problem with him winning, like, titles and putting him in the upper echelon of wrestlers. I like him. But, like, for people to kind of sit on that high horse and be like, oh, well, like, it's kind of snobby in a lot of ways. It's like, well, like, this guy, like, they just don't realize that, like, what he has done, what he's doing now is kind of the same thing as, and it's become mainstream instead of cutting edge like it was a few years ago. Now, I will give him that I think he has come up with, like at least two different, like, variations of moves. Like, he's now doing that, like, that super back suplex. And then he also has this kind of, it ends up being, like, a cross-arm breaker, but it starts off as, like a different kind of move, and then he kind of, like, flips it into a cross-arm breaker. So he does add moves to his repertoire that makes the matches interesting. But yeah, like his comeback spots and things like that, like you can see him coming a mile away. And while they're good, it's like don't tell me that, like, that's still innovative and creative and the stuff that Reigns or some of these other guys are doing has become stale. I mean, even some of these internet wrestling guys are trying to, like, get behind Ryback at this point. Like all of a sudden Ryback isn't, like, a complete creation of the machine. And I think Ryback's doing about as good as he could possibly do right now. I'm getting to the point where, you know, I don't dislike watching a Ryback match. Do I think he's innovative, creative, and like something new that I haven't seen before? No, not at all. But I mean, I think he's becoming passable. But they're getting behind this guy like he's reinventing the wheel over here. At the same, in the other side, talking out their mouth, saying how Roman Reigns is boring and just following the John Cena playbook.
What are we doing here? Breaking the wheel over here. Audie, no records.
I'm writing everything down over here.
But, breaking down the Daniel Bryan myth, his promos if you really look at it, isn't any different from a John Cena promo in terms of, like, you know, you fans and all you fans. I mean, this is what John Cena is, this tried and true method. He is playing the babyface promo. He's like, you know, I'm here because of all you fans. It's like, this has been done before. So it's not like he's breaking any new ground. And all these guys are supposed to be, like, internet savvy and independent savvy. It's like, you can't see that his promos over the past, since he's come back, have been, like, textbook babyface promos. Yeah. And there's just that whole problem with it. And then at the same time, when you have...
They're marks for themselves, and they think that he's speaking from the heart and actually talking to them as these guys that have supported
him. But I mean, come on. I mean, it's like, it's cheap pop. He's doing cheap pop all over the place.
It's pandering.
And not only that, but then when you go into pay-per-views and he has matches versus in pay-per-views, he's not doing anything new. The guy that is doing stuff, you know, the guy that is having matches, that pulls stuff out of the wheelhouse and stuff, and you're going like, oh, man, look at what this guy's doing. It's Seth Rollins. I mean, Seth Rollins, every pay-per-view is doing something new. Mm-hmm. And he's been, I mean, you talk about innovation. I mean, he's been doing like 4 or 5 months of just innovation stuff. And then at the same time, it's like he has to play a role, and his promos are still coming out really good. So it's just, you know, it's kind of a case. It's like, I don't understand how you can say, oh, Roman Reigns is part of the machine and we're going to boo him. Well, Daniel Bryan's part of the machine as well, and you're cheering him. And then you're not recognizing the 4 or 5 guys that are really kind of branching out on their own and really doing something and not appreciating that. I'm like, where's everybody coming through and saying, like, oh, Seth Rollins should be the next champion? Where's everybody saying Dolph Ziggler should do it? I mean, Dolph Ziggler, before Daniel Bryan came back, I mean, everybody's saying that about Dolph Ziggler. So he's got, you know, I think you were right. I mean, I'm going to admit that you were right. The worst thing that happened to Dolph Ziggler was him getting fired because he lost all the momentum that he had. And nobody's saying that. Nobody's saying a word about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just dumb. It's like you're taking away your best worker. You don't have anybody else to replace him. The shows were pretty boring for about 2 weeks until they brought him back. I'll also say that you said he would be back on the next Raw, which he wasn't. And then all of a sudden you bring him back.
You just got to bring that up, don't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. And now you bring him back.
I discovered Miguel Cabrera. Oh, okay. I discovered Chris Jericho.
Okay. All right.
Watch your step there, honey.
Yeah. Slide over there, honey. They bring him back, and now he's back to the old, like, Dolph Ziggler job guy. You know, he lost to Wade. And then what's Wade do? He turns around and he loses to Sin Cara. It's like you had Dolph Ziggler really working. And not only was he making himself look better, he was making the Intercontinental title relevant again. And as good of a character as Wade Barrett is, for whatever reason, they feel happy to put a belt on him, like, whenever he comes back from an injury.
And he never wrestles.
But then they turn around and make him look like shit and lose to, like, job wrestlers and just cut a bunch of promos that are good promos, okay, but you don't let him back that up and go and do it in the ring. Like, Wade Barrett's another guy, man. I mean, granted, like, if the guy continues to keep getting hurt, it would be hard for WWE to put their full backing on the guy. But there's another guy that could be completely believable as a WWE champion should they decide to play him right. And instead they decide that they need to have him job to Sin Cara, who, as much as I prefer the current Sin Cara to the previous one, I mean, he's not going to go anywhere. I mean, he's the definition of enhancement talent. He could put on a good match.
He's a Blue Blazer.
Yeah. Not as good as the Blue Blazer, but, you know, he could put on a good match. He's a decent worker. But you're never going to put a singles title on the guy, and really, the highest he's ever going to achieve is an NXT tag team belt. So, what do you think you're gaining story wise or like credibility wise for Wade Barrett by having him lose a match to Sin Cara just so he can come back and beat him the next week? Him beating him the next week doesn't do anything for him because everyone figured he should have won the first time. You know, if you want to put Wade in a program with Dolph Ziggler where he comes out on top, so be it. If you want to find any of the other guys that are kind of respectable talents that aren't, you're not doing anything with, like, without really thinking about it, like, Jack Swagger comes to mind, put him, like, have him beat up Jack Swagger a few times. At least, like, you can promote that as, you know, Bray Wyatt, Wade Barrett just beat a former 2-time WWE champion and however many time tag team champion. And when you look at the two guys facing each other in the ring, like, they're physical comparables. But no, he's gonna do jobs to Sin Cara. It doesn't do anything for anybody.
So here's, after hearing you eloquently house your griefs over what's going on, I think the one thing, and maybe that we can start going into this as well, but I think the one thing that's missing, like, you look at, like, a Dolph Ziggler, like, DVD, right? Or even look at, like, a CM Punk DVD, or, say, a Daniel Bryan DVD in 10 years in the future. And you look at, like, a Ric Flair DVD, or, say, even, like, a Ricky Steamboat DVD, a Dusty Rhodes DVD, a Hulk Hogan DVD, a Macho Man DVD. What do they all have in there? They all have huge rivalries that lasted for a long time. Right now, even Stone Cold and The Rock, you can have like a nice rivalry going along with that. Mankind and The Rock. Rock and Triple H. Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, which is already, you know, they have on the WWE Network this rivalry show. But all of this new talent now, okay, they don't have any sustained rivalries whatsoever. And I think that's really, you know, you take away, right now in the WWE universe, you take away factions, where factions have always been hot. The whole thing is, whenever wrestling's been at its hottest, a faction has been the basis for that, for when it gets hot. You know, WWE, you know, I mean, come on, you know, D-Generation X was the top faction.
Heart Foundation.
WCW had the Four Horsemen. Then, of course, you had the NWO, which really launched pro wrestling, and probably why there's so many people on the internet with you know, on Twitter right now talking about, because of the NWO and what WWE did. You take away the factions, and then at the same time, the one thing, the bread and butter of everything is the rivalry. There is no rivalries anymore. I mean, it's coming to a point where it's just like, you're getting behind one guy, and you're going to fight for that guy the whole time. You know, it's like, right now it's Daniel Bryan. You're going to be like, a big upsell, like, oh, I support Daniel Bryan. No rivalry whatsoever to speak of. Same thing with CM Punk, right?
I disagree. Daniel Bryan has a big-time rivalry with Kane. They fight every week.
And 10 years from now, some idiot.
When they do the Daniel Bryan, yeah, like, some, DVD, yeah, 3 hours, some it's going to be about 10 matches, yeah, of him and Kane.
Somebody that's never seen any, you know, somebody that's never watched wrestling, they're going to say, like, oh, Kane and Daniel Bryan was a great rivalry. It started because they were friends. And it's like, dude, that's the shittiest rivalry I've ever seen. And I feel like the brothers over here. Like, I'm cursing, you know, and you're like, oh, calm down now. Yeah. But that's the whole thing. Is like, you're taking probably the two most important things in wrestling, right? And then the third most important thing is, like, the character itself. Like, the character. They have certain characters that go above and beyond. But it's just a case where, you know, even Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, I mean, that's a huge rivalry in the WWE and in the WWE or WCW. So that's really the problem that I'm having, is like, you're taking the two biggest bases to watch pro wrestling. They have been thrown off to the side. And now it's just more like, you know, what's the next program? What's the next person going for the belt? And you bring up, like, Wade Barrett, right? Wade Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, that has all the makings of a great rivalry. Even like CM Punk was saying, like, hey, me and Daniel Bryan can always have a rivalry. You can always put us off to the side, and then when you don't have anything, you can go with it. There has not been a great rivalry in wrestling probably for the past 6-7 years.
Yeah. Even like the program with Dolph Ziggler and Luke Harper, man. Like, just on, like, the fact that these guys were complete opposites and both tremendous workers. Like, it was a really short-lived rivalry, but there was no way you weren't going to watch any one of the matches in that program. And they traded wins. I mean, that's the key. They keep trading wins. You don't know who's going to win one match from one to the next. I was sure Luke Harper was going to defend at that tables, ladders, and chairs match, or the ladder match, whatever it was. And then I was completely shocked when Dolph Ziggler won. And that's part of what made that match so great for me. It's like, I honestly didn't know who was going to win a match.
And then the next night, what did they do?
They squashed it.
So we're about 40... We're close to 50 minutes in. Let's go real fast. Like, what rivalries do you remember in wrestling?
I'm gonna go out of nowhere here on you, and this kind of goes to show, as much as I dislike John Cena, right? One of the things, and I liked Edge, like, pretty early in his career, but one of the things that, like, solidified Edge for me as this major superstar was, when you had John Cena as this baby face that nobody could beat and was just kind of whipping everybody up, like, year after year after year, it was always Edge. For whatever reason, it was always Edge that had his number. And Edge would come out and beat him. And that rivalry, I thought that was a great rivalry. As much as I don't even care about John Cena, I thought that was a really good rivalry just for the fact that, you know, 99.9 times I watch a John Cena match, I know who's going to win. When he was in these programs with Edge, Edge had the ability to beat him at any point in time. And that, I think that was the markings of this really, of a really great rivalry. So, you know, I'm not going to put that as like my all-time favorite rivalry. But in terms of the last decade, like the Edge-John Cena rivalry, I thought that was a great rivalry. And that's funny coming from me as much as I don't like John Cena. So that's when I would throw out there as a big-time rivalry that I think, you know, in recent years you can lean on something like that, you know? Like, find a guy that is always going to have somebody's number. I think that's a good way to go.
So what are you supposed to do now?
I would just look to you and say, what rivalry are you going to throw out here?
Well, I'm thinking of these, and it's very easy for me to say Flair and Steamboat or Macho Man and Steamboat. But really, I think the one that really gets overlooked is Triple H and The Rock. I thought that was a really good rivalry. It's really easy now to look at Triple H's career and go like, oh, he's one of the best of all time. It's what people say. And the same thing with The Rock, you know, like, oh, The Rock. I mean, The Rock is one of the best of all time. But when they were going for that Intercontinental belt and they were going back and forth and training it over, they were probably like second tier at that time, because the top tier was going to be like a Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Bret Hart. So these guys were really trying to claw for their spot, and it was really like, I don't want to say cool or neat. I don't want to even say refreshing. It was enlightening to see like two guys that wanted to get to that top tier, and they both, I think they legitimately did not like each other just because they went different ways with it. You know, I mean, Triple H, you know, was the better in-ring performer in terms of a technician. He also had the backstage pool with like him being a part of the clique, so he was fighting that at the same time. Where The Rock, you know, The Rock didn't have that, but the one thing that The Rock had was that he had a killer personality, and his personality carried a lot. And then when it came down to it, he could be a great heel in the ring. I don't think this, I mean, and the same thing is like, The Rock was a heel in the beginning, Triple H was the face. And then people forget, like, The Rock, it took like The Rock, like, what, 4 or 5 months to beat Triple H for the title. I think he had the title at that time, and The Rock was the face and Triple H was the heel. So they really played well off of each other. And it just, you know, they had a ladder match as well for the Intercontinental Championship. And talk about a match that gets overlooked. That Intercontinental match was a great match, and I think it ended with China hit The Rock in the Family Jewels, and you know, and Triple H won. But that's one,
the People's Jewels.
The People's Jewels, yeah, the Family Jewels. And but I think that's one that's overlooked.
Yeah.
So I'm throwing it back to you. Let's have you come up with another one.
Before I do that, I'll just kind of piggyback on what you're saying. I think one of the things that made The Rock Triple H rivalry so good is because they had this really legitimate, like, intercontinental title
feud. That's your favorite thing right there, the Intercontinental belt.
It's not that, but then...
No, I know, I'm giving
but
you
then,
that time.
Well, they had that, and then they were able to both make it to the main event level at the same time, and then kind of, like, extend that feud over the heavyweight championship. And like, you don't always see that, right? Sometimes you see, like, one guy on the way up while someone else is on the way down, and that's when they get their Intercontinental Championship run, and then they kind of springboard their way onto the heavyweight title and face new guys. But these guys were both on the same path at the same time, so you got to see that feud you know, manifest itself, like, between like DX and the Nation in certain ways, and then in the Intercontinental title level in certain ways, and then later on at the heavyweight level. So I think there was a lot of levels to the feud that those guys had. And I think that's why, like, overall, like, you know, I think if you're just going to point to individual matches, I think Rock and Austin probably had some more, like, high-profile matches, some better matches. But, like, from start to finish, like, that's a feud that not many guys get to make. Like, even, like, because, like, you know, I'm going a little long.
No, here, go for it.
But, like...
You're doing good. You're doing good.
If you go to Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat,
not as
right?
good as me, but good, yeah.
So, like, those two guys were on the same trajectory at the Intercontinental level. But because whatever reasons, like, I'm going to assume, like, in the 80s, WWE wasn't ready to let an Asian guy get on the world title level. Like, you know, Ricky Steamboat, like, kind of topped out at Intercontinental, and Macho Man ascended to become a world heavyweight champion. There's all these different reasons why certain guys get elevated to the next level and other guys don't. And just, it's very unique to see two guys in their prime at the same time, you know, hit each kind of level of like, the hierarchy of titles that Triple H and Rock got to. And I think that's what makes that a really special rivalry. Let's see.
Did you look up in the rafters?
I'm trying to think of something unique. I don't want to go too cliche here with rivalries. Let me think of one that I really dug.
You're looking up there.
Dude. I am. I'm looking up at the ceiling.
You gotta play the intermission music. Don't keep on making me do that, dude.
We talked about this before. But just the whole kind of like tag team scene in the Attitude Era of all these teams, like the Hardy Boys, the Dudley Boys, Jericho and Benoit, Edge and Christian trying to top each other. It wasn't like a one-on-one rivalry, but there was like four or five teams that just went all out, like week in and week out, and kind of elevated like the whole game. I thought that was a pretty special rivalry, especially when you talk about guys that are on the mid card or on the bottom of the card that had an opportunity to do whatever they could to try to bring themselves up to the top. It's not a one-on-one, it's not even a two-on-two rivalry, but you have like 10 guys, hungry guys, doing everything they could to scratch and claw their way up the card, and I thought that was a good rivalry between several different teams. And you saw a lot of single stars break out of that, like Jeff Hardy. I can't say he completely broke out, but he had every opportunity to, and he did elevate himself for a while. Edge becomes a big-time superstar. Christian becomes a pretty high-level superstar in his own right in his time. Benoit and Jericho are able to kind of, I think they might have had their runs already, but still able to maintain the fact that, like, they were forces to be reckoned with. And then, you know, the Dudley Boys, you know, never as single stars until recently for Bubba, but, you know, they're able to kind of carry on at that part of their legacy and extend their run as one of the all-time great tag teams. What you got?
There you go.
I just figured you're going to pick up.
I want to pull one out of the hat, too. I think Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, I thought that was a very good rivalry, especially when you added, like, Christopher Daniel into the mix. Basically, those three guys with kind of, like, the whole X Division, when X Division actually meant something at that time, three really different styles. AJ Styles is one of them, but, you know, AJ was kind of like the poster boy, a lot of innovative stuff. I know, like, his moveset isn't really a strong moveset, and a lot of his, like, signature moves are really, like, kind of forced. But then you had, like, a guy like Christopher Daniels, who was just, like, a really, really good worker that could go against both styles between AJ Styles and Samoa Joe. And then the guy that really came out of star in that was just, like, Samoa Joe. Because it's, like, you have, like, AJ Styles, and he's, like, kind of like the chosen one, right? He's the one that's supposed to take off. And I think over the course of that rivalry, you start watching Samoa Joe, and you're going, like, man, Samoa Joe really has, like, Samoa Joe is better than both of these guys combined. And you kind of, like, the whole, like, thing where Christopher Daniels had thrown the towel, you know, and AJ Styles lost, and then you kind of had a little bit of heat between there. And then you just had Christopher Daniels as well. And it's, like, the good thing about that rivalry was that it was supposed to be AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe, where Samoa Joe is supposed to lose in the end. But then what happens is you have Christopher Daniels, and he starts fighting AJ Styles. He fights Samoa Joe. And you know he has no chance against Samoa Joe or AJ Styles, but I think he really came out as, like, the better worker out of all three. And then you just have Samoa Joe as just, like, this just badass thing. Like, just, like, a really stiff guy. He did a lot of, like, kind of, he reminded me a lot of, like, Van Vader's, Big Van Vader stuff and everything. I really like that. I thought that rivalry was really good. I'm trying to get away from just looking at WWE. But that was one that I really appreciated.
Yeah, and add one level to that too. In that same time, Christian went to TNA as Christian Cage, and I thought Christian Cage really made that heavyweight title picture complete with like his mic work and his in-ring work. I thought the best work I've seen out of Christian's career was when he was contending for the titles in TNA. I was glad to see him come back to WWE, but I thought that guy was great over there. I would go another one, and we'll go back to WWE, and I, this is like a personal favorite of mine, but Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, dude, like, in terms of technical marvels, that I don't know that there was ever, like, there's a lot of rivalries that people say Kurt Angle had with somebody that were, like, technical masterpieces, and I could probably go to, like, Yuji Nagata. Kurt Angle and Yuji Nagata had some great matches, but, like, the consistency, it's like, you know, we talked earlier about these Daniel Bryan matches, and, like, seeing, like, certain matches over and over again, it's like, you could watch Kurt Angle and Benoit, like, 10 weeks in a row, and even if they put the same match on every time, it was so good, you didn't, you know, you had to see it every single time, and they always found a way to, even though it was the same spots, it wasn't the same match. They found a different way to, like, pull this move out here, this move out there, tons of false finishes of both their submission ability, so there's always, like, different ways that, you know, you could think, oh, here comes a finish or a predicament, and then somebody could reverse it, and it wasn't ever, like, something with, like, a guy like Cena again, where you're like, yeah, that guy's not very skilled wrestler, there's no way he should reverse that. Like, there was a ton of logic behind everything they did, a ton of impact, and just two of the better technical wrestlers that there ever was.
The thing with that rivalry that I remember are two things. It was the last, like, shoot match that I saw, it was a pay-per-view where there's just all straight shoot and chain wrestling, and they were able to do that for a long time, and, you know, Benoit lost, but he got a standing ovation, and that really propelled him to kind of the heavyweight picture. The other one that I really remember too was, it might have been the same match, I don't know, but Angle put Benoit in the ankle submission, and Benoit's like really close to the rope, and, you know, and everybody thinks he's going to grab the rope and get out, but then Angle standing up, and then he goes straight to the mat and wraps his leg around him, and just like, he ain't moving, and Benoit has to tap out. I mean, I just remember those two spots just going, like, it pissed me off because, I mean, I was a huge Benoit fan, but at the same time, it's like, man, Angle's got the goods, dude.
One other thing, like, even something you said, like, maybe 2 weeks ago, one of the big problems WWE has right now is there is no real heel. There's no monster heel. As much as that could be Brock Lesnar, he's not there every week, and at this point, you know, he's getting more than half of the crowd cheering for him anyway. But you had that time in WWE where, like, Mankind had become so popular, even if you wanted him to be a heel, he couldn't. Rock was in the same boat, and Austin was really in the same boat too. And then you had Kurt Angle, which, by all wrestling standards up to that point, he's Mr. USA, you gotta make this guy a babyface. And that's kinda how he started out. But on a really quick switch, they made him just such a bag, dude. They made him so hateable. And then the thing was, like, even though he was this really corny character, like drinking milk and stuff, and being like this really like kind of goofy dork, like, he was so damn good in the ring that if he were to beat anybody, you would never say, yeah, well, that was weak, he couldn't win that match. Like, this guy, like, just was so damn good in the ring, and he really became this legitimate heel that had a great run. He beat, like, all the guys that were kind of like the signature WWE Attitude Era guys, beat him clean in the ring, and no one could really say, well, that wasn't legit or that was weak, because he was that good in the ring. And he really helped in a time where you had all these guys that had become so popular that you had to keep them as baby faces. Like, you could take a guy like Kurt Angle, make him a heel, and he was just so talented that he made it work. And it might almost be in that kind of position now, like I'm saying with Reigns, not trying to compare Reigns to Kurt Angle in the ring in any way, shape, or form. Just the way that they're establishing Roman Reigns right now, it's like, you could make this guy heel, and he can be a legitimate heel, and he has the background of being a heel, so it's not like it's going to be some great, like, character change or anything like that. I think you can do it. He's like the one guy that isn't entrenched in one position right now. I think.
Well, let's not get into that. let's stick to topic. I mean, I think you're right, but the last rivalry I want to bring up, and I think this is it's fitting to end off with this one. This was the first live rivalry that we saw in real time watching wrestling, and the one I want to go back to, and I'm not going to say too much, but I want you to talk about it. But the one I want to go back to is Jake the Snake versus Rick Rude.
It was like just these completely opposite characters, right? Like Rick Rude was this like total pretty boy ladies man, and Jake the Snake was just kind of like this sadistic, like dirty, grimy guy. But I think those guys just had ring chemistry, right? It was like physically, even though Rick Rude had the better build, like they were about the same size. And then Jake just had this mean streak that you know, it was established anybody that guy was going against, you know, he could get over on.
Well, and that's the funny thing, because it was this rivalry where you were a big Jake the Snake fan, I was a huge Rick Rude fan, and we were totally at odds with everything. And it's funny because in order to argue why I think Rick Rude was better than Jake the Snake at that time, was I was like, well, I mean, look at this guy's physique, and you're a big Ultimate Warrior fan at the same time, and then you ended up using, like, Ultimate Warrior's physique against Rick Rude's physique. It's like, well, Ultimate Warrior's bigger than Rick Rude, and stuff. That ain't nothing. You talk about skins all the time. It's like, it was that rivalry where it's two direct opposites, and the best thing, any good rivalry, what it does is it makes a person that you don't like appreciate them in the end. And then when it ended, the rivalry ended on Saturday Night's Main Event when Jake brought his wife in at the time, Sheila, and he beat Rick Rude, and I was pissed off that he beat him. But I remember I was at your house. It was probably like 11 o'clock at night. We were probably done with like a game, you know, like we probably like lost to the Lightning again when we felt we should have won. And
nah, never lost to
that. Never then. But then at the end of the match, I was like, I'm watching at the end, it's like, you know, like I like Jake now, you know, like Jake did his job, Rick Rude did the job, and it wasn't like at that point in time of watching wrestling, I didn't think of a wrestler doing a job for someone, but the Rick Rude did do a job, but the whole thing was like it wasn't a forced job. It's like
it made sense.
Yeah, and Jake was, when it comes down to it, Jake had the better personality, was just as good, was probably a better ring general than Rick Rude was, but it was legitimate. And that's the one rivalry that I always go back to. That's like the first rivalry that I ever watched, and I wasn't mad at the end.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like, you know, sometimes, like, I don't watch that much boxing anymore, right? But sometimes, like, I remember when I used to watch a little bit of boxing, like, you see two guys, and, like, for some reason, it always seemed like the guy with the better physique always got his ass whipped in the end. Like, the guy that was totally shredded and ripped up versus the guy that was in pretty good shape but wasn't exactly, like, the other guy had the more skills. And it's kind of, you get that mentality going with wrestling. It's like, yeah, at face value, you'd say, well, Rick Rude's got a six-pack, and he's totally ripped, you know, and, like, you know, Jake the Snake's got, like, he's working a little bit of a boiler, and he's not super defined, but really...
He's balding and stuff.
Yeah, there. And he's got a bad mullet, but, like, you know, they're about the same height. I think weight-wise, they're pretty much equal, and it's like, you know, you can overmatch the fact that the other guy's a little more ripped than you by being, like, a crazy, sick, sadistic guy that doesn't care to put yourself through damage. You know, one of the, you know, the very few things that Jerry Lawler says that makes sense is, like, you don't ever want to get in a fight with an ugly guy because they got nothing to lose. And that was kind of the case with Rick Rude and Jake the Snake.
That's a perfect segue right there, because we're going to go into our golden mic. This one's a little bit long, but... And it's not, there's really not really any high spots, but it's like a fine champagne, you know, you really got to listen to it or just kind of sit back and enjoy it. So we're going to get into that right now.
Thank you.
Hogan.
Jim Hogan, the Hoosiers Losers.
The Hoosiers Losers.
So we had this whole other thing with Coco Beware and versus Frenchie. And the file got misplaced somehow. So, we talk about, like, kind of... And the one thing I liked about the Coco Beware and Frenchie one was that it was... People were saying it was boring and stuff, but then these two guys just carry the whole match just with their commentary. Let's get in a little bit about McMahon and Jesse and what made him work so well.
Well, they played off each other really well. Like, McMahon wasn't yet the Vince McMahon character, so, you know, he could be a guy that was like a dork and a goof that McMahon could poke fun of. But McMahon was still a good talker. So, like, he could... When McMahon started getting clout on by Jesse, McMahon could sell it. He could kind of continue to go down that rabbit hole of being a goof. And Jesse just kept working him over, and it was good. Like, Jesse was, like, the ultimate logic guy, right? Like, in terms of wrestling, he would always say something that actually made sense in terms of motivations or, like, what was actually cheating and what wasn't cheating. And then McMahon could play off it pretty well. Like, he wouldn't just go into, like, the Michael Cole playbook and just kind of, like, keep reciting the gospel. Like, McMahon could ad-lib. And I think both of those guys could ad-lib based off the match. I mean, that Frenchie and Coco match, like, you know, the thing was going nowhere. So all they did is they basically spent, like, 10 minutes talking smack about the referee.
Yeah.
And that was spot on. Like,
The most memorable thing was Jesse that was just saying it, was McMahon was saying it.
Right, and that's the thing, you're watching the match and you're realizing, yeah, dude, what the hell is this referee doing, right? Slowest count I ever seen. But even McMahon can take it back to the logic side and say, well, as long as he's counting that slow for both guys, then there's no problem with it. So he didn't, and I think JBL does a decent job of doing this too, where it's like, yeah, you know he's the heel guy, but every so often, like, depending on who it is or what the match is, like, he'll go give straight commentary, whereas, like, there's no logic behind, like, Cole just, like, slurping every baby face or old Jerry Lawler that was, like, just, like, slurping every heel that came around for no reason, right? They actually give you reasons, like, logically that make sense about why you would think that whatever the heel is doing at that point is justified.
And
two pounds of finger pressure will never be defeated.
It probably has a two count to this one, but the thing I liked about Jesse was he always talked about he was a big Hollywood star and stuff. And then when Mary Hart was part of the WrestleMania, and one of the best ones was she lusts over my body, McMahon. She wants to wipe the sweat off my body. And so just that one is a close second. And then, of course, the one where probably the best one, which I couldn't find, was when it was funny that they put a little, like, Hulk Hogan, like, laughing clip in there where he's, like, hulking up or whatever. But it was when Earthquake supposedly broke Hulk Hogan's sternum. And Jesse was like, all right, before the match, he's like, I got to go somewhere real fast. And so it's just McMahon, and McMahon's just like, it's like the Hindenburg, right? You know, like that one guy, you're like, oh, the horror, when the Hindenburg, you know, blows up. It was like kind of like the same thing, like, McMahon's just like crying up a storm, like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then Jesse comes walking back, and he's like, what did I miss? He's like, where were you, Jesse? You know, and that kind of brought up our whole, like, kind of pretzel, our pretzel episodes that we used to have, which I think we've said a long time back. So that was just a short one. With that, and unfortunately, there's not really any good Jesse the Body commentary clips. Yeah, some of his promos, but we all know Jesse for, at least I know Jesse for his commentary. Hall of Kayfabe, I think you'll like this one. I have one.
Oh, you going? All right, go ahead.
So you can table this one. Hopefully, you can table yours next week in honor of Black History Month.
Do we need to play, like, the little jingle?
No. Okay. Oh, jingle. Like how you say jingle, right? Yeah. Jingle all the way. Shook and jive. You want me to soft shoe? Get that hand in my fucking face, Carl. The Natural, Butch Reed. Go ahead and tell me if you think he deserves to be in the hall and why.
Did we never inducted Butch Reed before, just Ron Simmons?
I think we just did Ron Simmons, yeah.
Okay. and I almost kind of feel like we did bring Butch Reed in, but, like, you know, Butch Reed, like, first of all, like, the, especially at that time, like, early to mid-80s, that dude had the build on him, right? So, and with that, you know, he was still pretty athletic. I just like the Dune tag team. I mean, you don't really get to see a ton of, like, the natural Butch Reed's personality necessarily in Dune.
Well, if there's a question whether we put him in, you just want to talk him real fast and then put someone else in, whether we put him in or not?
I guess we could.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, I thought that Dune tag team was sick. And that, like, that team could have continued on and done a ton of stuff. But I think Butch Reed, like, was a little bit before his time. Like, you know, you never seen, like, a black dude with the blonde hair and had the good build going and, you know, had a decent match with Coco at WrestleMania 3. You know, he could do a lot of stuff, and then he had the Slickster behind him, and that, I think that kind of added a lot to him too, because he wasn't necessarily the best mic guy, but then he had the Slickster to do the talking for him, and a guy that had a really good look and was still pretty athletic in the ring.
I don't think I've ever heard Butch Reed ever cut a promo in his life, but I mean that's the one thing. I mean, yeah, I think he was before his time. I mean, the blonde hair on this guy, I mean, it was kind of made popular by Wesley Snipes in Demolition.
That was like 15 years later.
Yeah, though. That's what I'm saying. I mean, so yeah, I mean, like that. There's a lot of style that went along with that. I do want to say I don't think you have Ron Simmons without Butch Reed. I mean, I don't think you have Ron Simmons be the wrestler that he was without that Doom Tag Team. And that Doom Tag Team, kind of like the Samoan SWAT team, just like two teams that were really, really good, and you had a ton of respect for them, and they never got their due. And that's all I got to say about that guy. So if there's another person you want to, because I think we might have put him in there. I don't know if we did.
I kind of think we did. All right, I got. Let's see. I have one guy. I got two guys. All right, so I'm gonna let you pick a hemisphere, okay? And then based off that hemisphere, then I'm gonna go with one or the other. So, you want to go Eastern or Western hemisphere on this guy?
Oh, Eastern.
All right, it's not gonna be what you think, but
okay, that's fine.
I want to put Fit Finley in the hall, dude. Fit Finley was just like a straightforward brawler, and especially at the time when wrestling was starting to evolve with a lot of these more athletic guys, it really, and like Fit Finley was kind of this older dude when he started making his first appearances in WCW and WWE, and was really kind of like an antiquated guy. Like, there wasn't really, you wouldn't think there was a place for him, but he had a ton of great matches with Chris Benoit, a ton of great matches with Booker T, where they fought for the TV title. And just this straight, like, European brawling style that kind of, like, was kind of, like, similar to what you saw with Regal, but for whatever reason, like, they weren't really featuring Regal as much. It's like, I had every reason to think Fit Finley was going to be this stupid, boring guy that I had no interest in watching. And just every week, that dude would come out, and I wanted to see Fit Finley fight. And I don't know, it was just pretty impressive that he was able to, you know, I have no idea what age he was when he started debuting on American TV, but I gotta believe he was at least 40. But for a guy to be able to make an impact at that advanced of an age as a rookie, that's pretty damn impressive.
There's two things I want to say about Finley, and it's funny that we never. It's kind of like the same thing. It's kind of like his wrestling career. Like, it's a case where we never get around to this guy, but he definitely deserves to get accolades. The guy introduces a shillelagh in WWE television, and it's just funny. It was funny to hear, like, Cole go, like, the shillelagh, you know. And so, like, it's funny, like, if whenever I want to, like, really, like, kind of bug my family, you know, like my immediate family, which is, like, consists of three women, I was like, start busting out the shillelagh, and my daughters have no idea what a shillelagh is. And
it was a takeoff on Stevie Ray's Flapjack, though, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah. Well, whatever it was, it just sounded funny. So, like, every now and then, like, if I want to get on someone's nerves, you know, I'll just, like, start going, like, the shillelagh! And they get all, they're like, what the heck is a shillelagh? And I'll just keep on saying it. But the other thing, too, is, like, so, this guy's Irish, and he's an old-school guy, and he's a throwback. And one thing that's really helped me, like, especially, I think you probably kind of feel the same way, is that, you know, in soccer, we're coached by a guy from Scotland. And just taught us, like, really, like, old school soccer stuff that isn't flashy, There's no bones about it, but it works. And like, especially like coaching now in today's day and age, when you have parents that have no idea what soccer is, they think they know what soccer is, and they think it's like all high scoring or whatever it is, and they think that people should just pick it up and they should be successful at it. It's like, no, it's like, you know, your kid can look really good or whatever. I said, but when they get older, you know, like, they don't have the foundation for it. And that's kind of what I was having a bad season. Like, the last soccer season, I think we only won like one game, and we tied like five or six, you know, but it was like the age group where they're like the first year under 12s, which soccer totally changes. And I had, you know, I was trying to like teach them drills and stuff or anything, like me teaching drills.
So let me guess, you gave your daughter, you told her to hide the shillelagh in the sock.
Hide the shillelagh in the sock.
The referee wasn't looking.
Yeah. Hit him over. But what I did was I said, what I'm teaching you guys, nobody teaches anymore. I'm like, it's basic stuff. It's old school stuff. We play old school soccer, and it's tough. It's hard. It's in your face. And when you get older, this is going to prepare you for when your body catches up to what you want to do, when you start becoming athletic and stronger and stuff, because they're still children, right? But when you start kind of becoming really athletic, if you have that foundation, you're really going to take off. And you're like the perfect example, I think. I mean, because you're like really small and, you're very athletic. But if you didn't have that coaching in the beginning where you learned the basics, I remember watching you when you were like 16 or 17, you know, playing with your club team. And I'm watching you and going like, man, I'm like, you've really taken off, because I could always take you, because I could hit you like three or four times and you'd back down, you know, because you weren't strong enough. But then when you got started getting strong and you started getting faster than I was, and then you started getting just,
I was always faster than
you. Yeah, you always were. But you started getting as, you know, as strong as I was too. And I started watching, I was like, man, you, like, everything that you did in the beginning really paid off. And I think that's why Fit is such a good example of this, is because, you know, he's a behind the scenes guy, and the guys that he's kind of mentored, you really seen have taken off, and if they had the foundation to, when they need to succeed or when they're ready to succeed, they're able to do it. And Fit was never going to be like a top guy, but he always put on great matches. And you look at the guys that he had matches with, Chris Benoit, Booker T, and those like his two like main guys that he had,
right.
Early rivalries. We talk about rivalries; those are like their, Booker T's like one of his first rivalries as a singles wrestler. Same thing with Chris Benoit. And it really legitimized both those guys.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because it's like when Fit Finley started coming out and beating Booker T, like, I was a pretty big Booker T mark at the time.
Were you raising the roof and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Were you going, ha! Like that?
I was going, da na 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 na.
Oh, of course, so was I.
I was just pissing, like, why the hell is Fit Finley beating Booker T? Like, you know, like, elevate Booker T. But then, like, keep watching these matches, like, you know, this is a pretty damn good match. And then you watch them wrestle, like, four or five times, and you get to the point where it's like, I really don't care who wins anymore. Like, I wanted Booker to win, because I knew there was, like, more of a future in Booker. But, like, whenever Fit Finley would come out on top, I'd be like, yeah, it was still a good match. I got no problem with it.
He has the homage paid to him by Sheamus, who's coming back. You know, that kind of the fireman's carry backbreaker, yeah, or whatever it is.
Yeah. The forward roll.
Yeah, fireman forward roll. I feel like I'm Tanae over here.
Yeah, La Plancha.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah.
You always have to add La Plancha on there if you want to do Tanae.
Yeah, but I mean, that move, when I first saw it, I mean, that was a move where it started turning for me. I was like, oh, okay, this guy has something. Yeah. And it was kind of like the same thing. Like, yeah, like, he'd beat Benoit. I'm like, ah, come on, dude. Like, the first time he beat him, and then, like, the second match comes around, the third match comes around, the fourth match comes around, it's like, ah, you know what? It's like, this guy has the chops, he deserves to win. And but Benoit, same thing, it's like, you know, Benoit has a better future, I said, but this guy, it's like, it's building the foundation for this guy to really take off, and both those guys took off.
Yeah, so, good.
That was a good
you're
pull by
great
you.
With Fit, there you go.
I'm great with Fit. The Finster.
It fits.
It suits you. You remember that one, right?
I'm lost on that. I know it sounds familiar. What is it, though?
So it was when one certain NBA star won the title, and he had probably like a 2 or 3 year run, sans Michael Jordan. It was Hakeem Olajuwon with the big and tall commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it suits you.
Was he wearing his Spaldings at the time?
Maybe, I don't know, but did
LaFonso Wilson borrow some ponies?
Hey, don't mess with LaFonso, dude. LaFonso, I still have my LaFonso. I still got my poster in the back, dude. It's not as good as it's not the best endorsement of all time. And the best endorsement of all time was
Chris Webber's hat?
No, that one's a close second.
Carl Malone's LA Gears?
No. No. Not that one. You know that guy had to pay a fine? Like every game that he had those light-up shoes, they fined him like 10 grand and fined like LA Gear. They're like, man, like, we're paying more in fines than we are selling tennis shoes. So, the best one was, you know which one it is. You know. Who's on the
court? Patrick Ewing?
It's Shaq.
No, the best one was, it's so real.
The Sammy Sosa baseball?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the all-time horrible promo right there.
He's so real.
So real.
You're not my father. All right, so we're Moose Gill number 97. We haven't even introduced ourselves yet. So the guy that was carrying all the commentary today is Better Have My Donuts. I'm Bad News Ramen. We kind of switch off back and forth. Sometimes I get on a rant, but you know, you opened up the show saying that you really couldn't like really think about wrestling right now, but you know. You to take a 1990s rap reference, you show improved today, dude. So
show improved.
You know, yeah.
Right. Well, it was good. It was good for me to get away for like an hour from just thinking about basketball scenarios and come and talk the wrestling business.
A couple things. You know, talk about a 1-2 blow, but you know, condolences to Dean Smith's family and then
the Tark
today. The and man. If you never saw those Running Rebel teams in the early 90s, man, you missed out. I mean, that team was, you talk about like a super team, dude. I mean, Larry Johnson, Stacey Ogman, Ackles, Greg Anthony, that one guy that always
gets Hunt.
Hunt, and then there's that one tall guy that would always get the rebound and go, ah, like that. I've mirrored that a lot of times. So I get the rebound, just pull it down, start yelling all crazy and stuff.
Best memory of Stacey Ogman was, for whatever reason, NBA Tournament Jam or NBA Jams Tournament Edition, I had the synergy with Stacey Ogman and Dominique Wilkins.
I think everybody had the synergy with Stacey Ogman. Ogman was the man.
He couldn't shoot in real life, but in that game, he was like he was just a gunner, and the guy won me many a game in college.
That and then
and Danny Manning in LA.
Your boy Danny Manning.
Don't mess with me with Danny Manning and Ron Harford. Don't let me get the edge.
But the best team was only like for like a split second. It was only like one edition. But the best team ever released an NBA Jam. Well, Glenn Rice and Glenn Rice just by himself. I think he was paired with Cycli.
Glenn Rice and Steve Smith.
Glenn Rice and Steve Smith. Yeah, it was good. But my all time favorite, Latrell Sprewell and Chris Webber.
Webber?
Yeah, which Sprewell and Webber.
Hardaway off the bench.
Hardaway off the bench. Rooney off the bench.
I don't think Rooney was in that game.
Rooney was in that game.
Was he really?
Yeah.
He had four guys in that one?
Yeah, they would have four guys, yeah. It was the arcade, yeah. But it was like a limited.
Oh, the arcade one.
Yeah, okay. It was a limited release. So, Moose Girl number 97. Got my boy Ben Abendonis over here on Bad News Ramen. And like we always do,
I'm going to go look for some fake breasts.
There we go.
Yo. Yeah, bitch. Hey, yo. Motherfucker. No. Hey, yo. Swallow it. Hey, yo, we dad's lost this bloody version of glaze. Just slingshot through a gem in his mouth. Swallow his razor. Say no more, my back be parked against the wall. Trooper square holding. Face don't give a fuck about the law. I wore the bracelet. Don't get blinded by the ice ball. It's not cold. Piranha Bill slept. Lost his decimal. Look at my jumper logo. Look familiar. It's power. Through every fine stitch. Knocks an inch of Eddie Bauer. Gucci sneaker rock. It's just another form of test box. No cock blocking. Supreme clientele. Till I'm dropping. Can't go slanting. Go serene with a hippie home now. Club bandit. Never empty handed when less handed. Mark Cole and Austin. Mark Cole and Austin. Down in Boston. Bumped in the deck. Copping the lofting. Big chain swinging. Nigga. Matchbox. Car driving. Street wildin', Raleigh with the four finger gliding. Watch him, scorching with spells, anti-toxin. Amoxicillin stocks, skyrock, hit Bobby Moccasin. Switch from Perk Plus, escrow on the side, throwing sun truck. Ghost to keep shining till the sun busts and roll out. Born to be right behind the curtain with the nose out. 60 cent to get the rover out. Featherhead heavings, teething on Mike Dicks with eyes said, now the kids die for your bread. Yo, boys don't want us in clubs because we spazzed out. Who is these righteous motherfuckers with they flagged out? Stapleton Project, recognize you're looking at a lost best. Putting on the hits is no contest. Now, who the hype is in New York City? Wu-Tang! Radio, stop shitting on me!
I got you.
got 50 men out on the street now. If they all get bitch troubles, I starve. Is that it?